When we first started on the project, we thought, wow, what is an interesting way to tell this story that is different than the ways this story has been told before? And we kept thinking about that. And then when we contacted the university archives and were able to look at their extensive collection of films from Drez and from Tim Nugent, it really helped us set the tone for the whole documentary, because looking at these films, it was a time capsule. We could see what it was like for Tim in those early years when he was really fighting to get this program going. We saw the fight in him. We saw how he had the forethought to document what his program was doing right from the early parts of the program in the late 1940s. He had film cameras, and he was documenting his students on the quad here at the University of Illinois and the challenges that he would put them, like going up and down stairs. And luckily, the university archives, and Chris Prom in particular, was able to get these films from Tim when he was moving out of his house. He had stored a lot of them in his home office, and they were able to acquire them and start the process of digitizing them. And so now everyone has access to this wonderful collection of films from the very early years of Tim Nugent's work.
Well, our physically disabled students, including those confined to wheelchairs, those with high-level or neck-level paralysis, are pursuing 56 curricula in 10 colleges and divisions of the University of Illinois. They're doing just about anything that any other student would do.
That would be probably in the late 50s, early 60s. I don't know the exact year, but there was an interview, several interviews that were done for different programs. One was a local program that was produced by WCIA called Abilities, Not Disabilities. And they had done a very nice interview with Tim. And what I saw in that was really Tim's fire coming out in that interview. Knowing Tim as an older person and had been through this fight, he was more of a mellower soul. But when you saw him back in those days, you saw that he was a man who had to fight for his program, that he did not take no for an answer. And I can't even imagine what it must have been like for him to be starting up this program and then being told by the university that they were not going to fund you. And for 8 years, he put together this program without any funding from the university, and he fought for it to continue to exist.
His way in, I guess the path to that was through VA funding, at least, to start out.
Yeah, World War II was really essential to the start of this program. Tim was a World War II veteran, and he came out of that with a deep connection to his fellow veterans, and he wanted to help them. While he was recovering from surgery in the hospital, he saw these men who had been physically disabled in the war, and there was new technologies around at that time. Penicillin was being used, and these men were living longer. Previous to that time, it was the expectation that you would live 3 months to 3 years after you had a spinal cord injury. There was no hope for these men to continue on with this quote-unquote normal life. Tim wanted to make that happen for his fellow soldiers. So when he was called by the University of Illinois to come to the Galesburg campus and start that program, he originally thought it was so he was going to work on his PhD and see what would happen. But he had a passion for what he was doing, and he was not going to let these men down. And these World War II veterans were the perfect candidates for his first students. They were fighters. They were guys that were willing to take on all kinds of new challenges and the methods that were brand new at this time, this whole idea of rehabilitation, of trying to push them to do everything that everybody else was doing.
And yet, after a couple of years, U of I shut down that Galesburg campus.
They did. And what I find very interesting about that story is that was the first protest for disability rights ever. Tim started that. He said, "You're going to shut down this campus, but these men are not going to get left behind. I want them to be able to continue their college education." So he took a group of World War II veterans to the state capitol to ask for their program to be continued. I mean, can you imagine today there's a group of 20 veterans in wheelchairs that show up at the governor's mansion, and the governor refuses to even see them? It was covered by all the press. He got the attention. And luckily, through a technicality in the GI Bill, he was able to continue his program here on this campus. This campus had previously said, no, we do not want these students here, though they had taken the able-bodied students.
Well, a couple of just really distressing things about the mindset then was, even from the parents of someone who was either injured or born with a disability, you weren't expected to have much of a life. You'd stay in bed and and that's about it. And they were also treated, it seemed at some point, like a minority.
Our mission was to help people understand what these people were facing back, you know, 50 years ago. It was a different world. It was a world where people that were in a wheelchair or people with physical disabilities were not expected to have the same life as able-bodied people. They were not expected to go to school. They were not expected to hold a job. They didn't have a long lifespan. And that is what Tim was fighting for, was to change that. And that's also why he was a master at documenting what he was doing.
And I'm wondering, too, if you're 19, 20 years old on this campus and you take it for granted that you're going to see curb cuts and ramps and other things, that just was not the case 50, 60 years ago. You didn't have these amenities.
Yeah, you didn't have anything. Tim started that. He was the one who pushed for curb cuts, for the first accessible bus system. He had Greyhound donate him buses so that he could convert them and take his students to class, because he came from a very small campus of Galesburg where everything was connected by corridors. It was in an old Army hospital, so everything was accessible. When he came here, he's in a very large campus that's spread across two cities. One of his challenges is, how am I going to get these kids to class? And the university was not building ramps for him or trying to think of ways to get the students to class. He had to come up with all of that. He had to go out himself and build ramps into Lincoln Hall, into Gregg Hall, so that his students could get to class. He had to move classes so that they were on the first floor so his students could be there.
And you had a real challenge in this program, because you want to talk about how he fought for all these students, but you've barely addressed sports until 20 minutes in. You want to talk about how this led to all the Paralympians coming from the U of I and other sports that they participate in.
Yeah, that was another big conversation that the producers and I, Tim Harton and Caitlin Southworth, that we all had, is how to incorporate what was happening today along with what had happened in the past. And people today know that the University of Illinois is a powerhouse when it comes to wheelchair athletics. I mean, the number of Olympic athletes and Paralympic athletes and Boston Marathon winners that are coming out of this campus, they see that success. And we wanted to be able to show that what had happened 60 years ago had paved the way for what these students were experiencing now. And luckily, we were able to talk to a lot of the current teammates, and they recognize their own history by seeing what is happening over at their training facility. It's now a U.S. Paralympic training site. They have an amazing coach, Adam Blakeney, and they have created this site, as Josh George said, where you see the history on the walls there. You see the history of these photographs. So every day they're reminded of where the past was and are thankful for what they have today.
You and I have both been journalists on this campus for quite a while, so you don't have to be here long to hear about Tim Nugent and what he meant. But I wonder, because you've researched him so much, there are stories that came out in the last few months, or stories that you were told from some of the interviews you did.
Yeah, there were several stories that we didn't have time, and we only had 30 minutes to tell the story, and it is a really incredible story of Tim Nugent. I would say one of them, when Tim organized, first of all, Tim was not allowed to use the sports facilities at the university when he was organizing his sporting events. He did get permission to have a national wheelchair basketball tournament at Huff Hall, and the U of I said that he could build ramps into the university building for that tournament. But then he immediately, as soon as the tournament was over, had to take those ramps down because they were concerned that the able-bodied people would hurt themselves on them.
And they couldn't call themselves Fighting Illini.
No. That was another interesting fact that we uncovered, was that they were not called the Fighting Illini. And the Fighting Illini's basketball team at the time was nicknamed the Whiz Kids. So Tim Nugent called his team the Giz Kids, which was based on a gizmo, which was an apparatus that they used to go to the bathroom.
I'm wondering, too, what this will mean getting on the Big Ten Network. Here's a chance to tell a story about just an amazing life that gets some coverage in other places outside Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah, that is definitely a goal with Tim Harton and Caitlin Southworth and I, is that we really want this story to be known by a greater audience. It's not often you get a chance to legitimately say you did a story on somebody who changed the world. And Tim Nugent changed the world. He made the world a better place for all of us. And another part of his legacy is that the students that came out of this university, not only did they get an education, but they went back to other parts of the country and they realized they had a vision of what the world could be here at the university, the access that they had with the curb cuts and the transportation system and the attitudes, and they wanted to make that happen in other parts of the country and other parts of the world. So not only is he the father of accessibility, he's really the father of the accessibility movement and the rights movement for disability access.